Welcome to Always and Forever, a spoiler-free One Tree Hill podcast where we analyze and dissect the greatest teen show from the early 2000s.
This week we are discussing Nothing Left of Blah Blah Blah. It has been 2 months since we recorded an episode, friends. Bear with us. This week we are discussing Nothing Left to Say But Goodbye, the 8th episode of season 4, which was written by John A. Norris, directed by Janice Cook, who previously directed season 3, episode 4, An Attempt to Tip the Scales, aka the Masquerade Party episode. Fun fact.
Cool.
And originally aired on the CW on November 22nd, 2006.
According to the episode description in our OTH DVD box sets, this is the one where the annual basketball awards banquet is a big night for MVP Nathan, and as hopes cross and clash for Brooke, Peyton, Lucas, Haley, Rachel, and Derek too.
Somebody told me that this is the place where everything's better and everything's safe.
Giving my MVP speech, I'm Caitlin Elenich.
And not wearing a tricar, I am Jeremy Rodriguez. Which, by the way, I don't know if it was in the last episode or the previous episode, or the episode before that, where I talked about wearing a shit ton of cologne and like not smelling the best. Yeah. It was definitely tricar I was wearing.
Really?
Yes, it was. So this brought back a memory for me.
That is funny.
Anyway, this episode is titled after the song by Audioslave. What did you think about this song, Caitlin?
Okay, so the title, Nothing Left to Say But Goodbye. Based on that and some of the lyrics in the song, such as the chorus, I've been chased by a rain cloud, I was lost and nearly drowned and kicked around, but now I'm found and I won't run away. To me, I was thinking that relates kind of to like the Peyton and Derek dynamic. Like Peyton was lost, Derek really kind of helped her kind of find her way again and feel safe and like confident. And now Peyton, like, as you see at the end of the episode, she's not going to run away anymore. She can kind of stand on her own. So that is what, like, came to me immediately. What about you?
Yeah. Like, Peyton was, like, saying goodbye to, like, an old situation.
Yes, in a yes. Way.
Yeah, I thought the title was pretty on the nose, honestly. In addition to Peyton and Derek, we also have Brooke and Lucas saying goodbye to each other. You know, and not only saying goodbye to each other, like, hey, like, our relationship is officially over, but also, like, let's say goodbye to, like, this, like, heartbreak and pain that we've been putting ourselves through since we broke up. And I would also say this would apply to Haley and Rachel saying goodbye to, like, their past, like, feud, for lack of a better word. And also Dan and Karen, where they're saying goodbye to the past as well, and they're trying to move forward as well.
Yeah, the episode is kind of about, like, second chances, you know, Haley giving Rachel another chance, Karen giving Dan another chance. So I think that is all related to this. Pretty, it was actually one of the better, like, lyrics that we've had in a while. And I know we have not podcasted in a while, so it really feels like a while. But I feel like there were a lot of songs at the beginning of the season that were just like, I don't know. I don't have too much to say. But this one felt like it captured the episode a bit more than usual.
Yeah, like normally I'd like sit with the song and try to figure out like if there is a connection to the episode, but this one it was like, okay, that was easy. I only needed to listen to the song once and I'm like, okay, I'm good.
Yep, same. I love it. All right, let's get into the episode.
Yeah, so this whole Nathan and Zante thing, and like, you know, why like, you know, these gamblers care so much about fucking high school basketball.
That is the eternal question. Why? And it's like, this is a teenager that they're interacting with.
Yeah.
It's just so wrong to me. It's like, I know all of this is illegal to begin with, but I just feel like it's even worse that it's a minor who they're taking advantage of.
Yeah, it's like
dealing
with the idea of child exploitation, yeah.
And, like, they say one... I know you can't believe what they're saying, but, like, they tell him one thing, like, this is that last game is the end of it. And then they come back at the beginning of this episode and say, well, we want you to lose the state championship. So it's like Nathan did what they asked and it still wasn't enough. Oh, it has to be the state championship, you know?
Yeah. And one of the things I kind of enjoy about this storyline now is because I feel like with One Tree Hill, I feel like we haven't cared about like basketball in a while, like, let's be honest here, like, because I feel like if this is like any other storyline, it's like, okay, like, who cares if they lose the state championship, like, Nathan has to live, you know, but with everything going on with Whitey as well, like, I was really feeling, like, the heartbreak. I'm like, oh god, like, this really is a conflict, like, win or lose the state championship, this is a conflict for me.
For sure, because, like, it's Whitey's last season, and he's never won before. There's so much riding on this. It's their senior year on top of it. You know, this is their last chance. It's really gut-wrenching, actually.
Yeah, and then on top of that, just, like, you know, the threats to their life, too. Like, the fact that, like, they were going to break Nathan's leg behind that Karen's Cafe. And not only that, but they also seem to know who Haley is. And, you know, they went to Karen's Cafe and just gave Haley a $100 tip, which is, like, great. But it's so chilling, the fact that, like, these people are literally stalking Nathan here.
I know. The fact that they, like, went out of their way to go to the cafe and, like, tip Haley, it's really creepy.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really creepy.
Yeah, this encourages Nathan to ask for help from Dan. And one of the things I found pretty intriguing is that when Nathan told Dan, like, their names, Dante and Bear, Dan immediately knew who they were. And I felt like that kind of painted an interesting picture of him, both as, like, an evil car salesman, like, mustache twirly villain, and also as a politician. Wonder what that says about politicians here.
Yeah, that crossed my mind, too, because I was wondering, okay, so Dan knows who they are, so...
He had to have been involved in a criminal element at some point.
Yeah, that's my question. Like, when and where did he do something like that?
Yeah, like, I mean, being rich, he had to have, like, crossed paths, like, with a few bad people here and there. So it's kind of interesting that they don't really delve into that, but it does make you think, like, okay, there is a little bit more to Dan here, and I kind of enjoyed that whole aspect of it.
Yeah, we don't know what goes on behind the scenes, you know?
Yeah, but Dan offers to pay them off, and then Dante and Bear essentially laugh, and they were, and then he basically threatens Dan with, like, all of his family, including Karen. And I felt like the stakes were raised significantly for Dan there.
Yep. So it leaves you to imagine, like, there's no other option but to lose the state championship.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what else could Dan do? It makes you feel hopeless. And, like, these guys are really serious.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then we should also note the little conflict that's happened with Lucas as well, because Lucas has to award Nathan the MVP award, and now he's feeling conflicted because he's like, hey, like, you know, do you deserve this? Long story short.
And when they were at the banquet, I think Derek asked, so are you going to win the state championship? And then Lucas says to Nathan, like, across the table, so, like, everyone could hear, yeah, Nathan, are we gonna win? And then he says, we'll try.
So many terrifying layers to this, and I'm, like, excited to see what comes of it!
There's so much pressure on Nathan, I mean, he's the one who got himself in this situation, but I can't imagine.
But he was desperate at the same time. Yeah. Like, because this was a time before GoFundMes and everything when...
Yeah, true.
Yeah, it's like, he could, like, easily, like, crowdfund money. Like, this was literally the only option he had. And honestly, it was, I mean, it was all because, like, Dan wouldn't help either. Dan could have helped this kid. And he chose not to.
I know. I guess, ugh. Now Dan knows the extent of it.
Yeah. And
we'll get to more of that later.
Mm-hmm. So, let's talk about Rachel. She seems to be failing calculus.
Yeah, she receives a letter in the mail. Oh boy, senior year and you're failing calculus. That is quite concerning. And then she tries to go to Haley for tutoring help, and Haley wants nothing to do with her.
I love, like, the clapbacks that Haley has given to Rachel during, like, this entire episode. Like, as soon as Rachel comes into the tutor center, Haley's like, in case you're wondering, the nurse's office is still the best place to treat a venereal disease. And then later, Rachel is like, okay, like, you know, I really appreciate if you could help me. And then she says, and then when Haley says no, Rachel is like, oh, I can understand, like, your schedule is probably booked solid. And Haley's like, oh no, I have plenty of time. I just can't stand you.
I know. Haley does a really good job.
It's like,
it's so comical.
It's like the ultimate shade, and I am, like, here for it. Like, Haley in season one could never. And to see her, like, really grow into this type of person who can, like, quickly clap back, I absolutely fucking love it.
I always appreciate some good sass.
Now, did you take calculus in high school?
No.
Yeah.
That was definitely not a requirement. Like, if you were an advanced...
It was not a requirement for us.
If you were an advanced track, you would have probably ended in calculus if you wanted to. But there's no way. I didn't even take trigonometry. I was stupid in math, so let's be honest.
Same. during my junior year, because there was, like, in our high school, there was, like, this whole weird thing where, like, in order to take, like, certain science classes, which I was on the advanced level, quote-unquote, for science, but not for math, but in order to take the science classes, I had to essentially take more math courses that, like, was, like, required for graduation, if that makes sense. But anyway, I took a 2-week pre-calculus course. And when I say 2-week pre-calculus course, I mean I dropped the class after 2 weeks because it was fucking hard. But technically speaking, I should have needed to take that class in order to graduate. But I fought with my guidance counselor and I got out of taking it.
Really?
Yeah. So sometimes I have, like, these dreams where I'm like, God, did I actually graduate high school?
Because I think you had to take 3 years of math, if I recall. Because I remember my senior year, I took, like, a college math class, and it wasn't required, but it was just to, like, I took it just to,
like,
keep my brain kind of continuing.
I took that, so.
So, like, if you started high school in a more advanced track, then you would be ending the net, like, on a more advanced track. So you had to take your 3 years, if that makes sense. Like, I started with pre-algebra, then geometry, then algebra. Or no, sorry, not pre-algebra. Algebra 1, geometry, and algebra 2. And that was all that was required of me. And algebra 2 was rough. I struggled. That was, like, one of my worst classes.
Oh, boy. Yeah. I hated geometry. Geometry was tough for me.
See, I didn't mind geometry.
Oh, really?
I struggled with algebra, too. Totally.
Damn.
I think
lucky you.
I think I got one marking period. I got a C, and it was, like, the only time I ever got a C.
I was in honors algebra 1, though, funny enough.
No, I was never in honors math.
And I think I got, like, a C in it, and I just said, like, nope, I'm not doing honors math ever again. Because, like, I did very well in eighth grade math, which was, I thought was, like, a little bit easier. So they said, like, okay, you're going to be in honors. But then I tried it. I'm like, no. Let's not do this.
Yeah. Moral of the story, calculus. I would be shocked if that's required
at high schools. Probably not. It might be now.
Maybe it is now. It's so pointless.
Oh, jeez.
Like, depending on what you're going into, which everything that I went into and, like, studied had nothing to do with math.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I anything I need for math, like, I could easily do with a calculator.
Yep.
But neither of us pursued, like, engineering careers or anything like that. So it's just...
So it's a shame that she has to struggle to pass this. I feel bad.
So, I mean, God forbid if, like, Caitlin and I ever tried to do, like, a career change and we decided to be engineers in our late 20s. But, I don't feel like that's going to happen.
No. I don't even want to know what my math skills are now.
Oh, yeah, no.
I'm probably, like, a fourth grade math level or something really low.
Like, I'll literally, like, whip out my phone to type in, like, 2 times 2. Like, let me just double check to make sure that's still 4. Like, just in case.
Ugh, gosh.
But can we talk a little bit about, like, this teacher, though, that talks to Rachel? She's like, you're a pretty girl, and you flirt your way out of trouble, but you can't bluff math. Study for your final, okay? And graduate with your friends.
Like, it's that easy.
Yeah, like,
I don't know the flirt your way through high school. An educator saying that to a student is really concerning.
Yeah.
Really concerning.
Like, could you imagine saying that to anybody? I did not like the actress who, like, portrayed that part, like, does a good job with the material she's given, but, like, I just hated that character. Like, entirely.
Yeah, and it's like, she did nothing, she didn't really provide any helpful advice. It was basically just throwing shade at Rachel a little bit. Like, all you do is flirt. And you're pretty, but, like...
You're very pretty, but you can't be pretty for math.
Insults. Just insults, you know?
Ugh. And I remember the drama queens talked about this, too. They were saying that this was, like, the creator trying to, like, insert himself a little bit into it. That's how they perceived it.
Oh, really? I don't remember them talking about this specific scene.
Yeah, I forget exactly what they said, but they said something along those lines where they were, like... Like, it just seemed like this was his way of trying to insert, like, himself into the story by being like, oh, like, you know, you get it, you get by being pretty, blah, 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 that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Gosh.
But both Brooke and Nathan talk to Haley and basically encourage Haley to give Rachel a second chance, because Brooke is like, oh, Rachel's been really good to me lately. And then Nathan's like, well, when I was freaking out about the whole pregnancy thing, it was Rachel who got through to me. And then Haley's like, I'm going to have to tutor Rachel, aren't I?
Yeah, I like that scene and how it just, like, it cuts away at that moment.
Yeah, it's so funny.
I'm surprised Nathan said... I'm surprised he said what he said. You know, Rachel did have a little input. Like, although, what exactly did Rachel say to Nathan? Do you recall? It's been so long now.
At the press conference, she just basically told Nathan that, like, he's going to be okay.
Now I remember.
Yeah, and that this kid is going to have 2 pretty great parents. Because, like, Nathan was, like, really freaking out. He didn't know what to do. Like, he just didn't know which way to turn to. And Rachel was, like, one of the only people, I would say, who was literally like, you're going to be okay.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
You will figure it out.
For some reason, I couldn't remember the scene, but that helped. Yeah, so it makes sense that he would say that about Rachel. But it was just still surprising to me in that moment that, like, Nathan was the one to finally convince Haley. In the end.
Right, yeah. Even Lucas tried to convince him, convince her now. But yeah, so Haley finally says, like, okay, I guess I'm going to have to do it now. Kind of sure repeating itself, too, because, like, think about it. Like, she had to tutor Nathan, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, Nathan turned out to be a problematic little, you know, he was problematic at the time and then he grew. So I feel like there's lots of potential for this storyline here.
Yeah. And Nathan even said that in the moment, you know, this isn't the first time that you would be giving someone a second chance when it comes to tutoring. So, yeah, that should be interesting. Haley's a good person, so it doesn't surprise me that she changed her mind.
Mm-hmm. She gives a little bit of shade at Nakona, which we'll get to later.
Yeah.
But until then, let's talk about Dan and Karen. Dan asks Karen to go to the banquet, and she turns him down very gently. And also, I want to take a time to say, name brand orange soda watch.
I saw it there, and I saw it at the school on the soda machine.
Yep, I will. Yeah, don't spoil that. I want to do my name brand orange soda watch later too.
You can do it then too. It's like when they put it in the episode, it's just in your face.
I thought it was like over with season 3, but I guess it's still there in season 4. I guess they were still a sponsor. I don't know like how long this lasts for, but should be interesting to find out.
Yeah, I don't really remember it so much in season 4 either, but
yep.
Here we are.
But anyway, you know, Karen turns him down gently, but she's so kind to him, though. Like, when he first comes in, she's like, she says, like, oh, this is your 5th visit of the week. Like, what can I get you? Like, you know, it was, like, very kind and just very sweet. But it seems like she is, like, turning over a new leaf with him in a way. But then she gets inspired to give him a second chance after hearing both Lucas and Haley talk about their own personal second chances. Lucas with Brooke and Haley with Rachel. And then that's when Karen's like, yeah, second chances, uh-huh. And then she shows up at Dan's doorstep and she's like, hey, this is not a date. And then they go. And then they go to the banquet together and we get an update about Tim. Remember Tim?
Yes.
Yeah, so we get Sherry, his mom. We find out that he's in a new school, you know, that focuses on students' strengths and weaknesses. And then Dan, being, like, problematic and pretty ableist, says, just say he's slow, Sherry. Like, which is, like, a good clapback for Sherry, cool, but, like, it's also, like, ableist and terrible, you know? Yeah,
but it's coming from Dan, so... He's already a villain.
I know, but it's like, I don't know how to say it, but like, it just seems like we're not unpacking like the ableism of this comment. We're just like, being like, oh, Dan's a jackass.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're supposed to believe that Sherry deserves this, but I don't think Sherry necessarily deserves it. Sherry deserves like shade for a lot of other reasons, but not about like her son's ability level, you know? Like, why go after the low-hanging fruit?
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess because of that comment, it all started with that comment where she's like, oh, it's just like high school. You guys are together and you're pregnant. So I guess that was supposed to, like, rub them the wrong way, you know?
Yeah.
And then that's why Dan says that. But it's so random that we would get a little follow-up to Tim in this episode. Like, where did that come from?
Just an explanation for, like, why he, Brett Claywell, hasn't been on the show. I guess so.
It's funny that they didn't have, like, Nathan include that dialogue at some point.
Yeah. But also, legitimately, why was Sherry there?
Yeah, you're right. Like, if Tim isn't on the team... Why was she there? I guess she's being portrayed as, like, this busybody type lady.
And maybe she just wants to, like, relive her high school glory days. I feel like that's something to go after her for. And Karen kind of does it when she says, is your son even on the basketball team anymore, Sherry? Like, I feel like that was good enough.
Yeah.
Because they could have just went after, like, oh, wow, you peaked in high school. Good job. Slow clap. But instead they decide to go after, like, the fact that their son is in special ed, I would assume. It's a whole thing.
But... it does a whole thing in a very short amount of time.
But anyway, at the banquet, Dan tells Karen that, you know, he has regrets of his own, and... I don't know, it looks like there's some hope for this.
I mean,
reconciling.
With the information that we as the viewers know, this is so cringy.
Tell me more.
Well, we know that Dan killed Keith. How are we supposed to feel about Dan warming up to Karen? And Karen giving him a second chance? Without the circumstances surrounding Keith, it would be a nice thing to see them finally, like, make amends. But with all that we know as the audience, it's just so hard to see this as genuine.
You don't think it's genuine that Dan is, like, feeling regrets and feeling sorry, or...?
I think he's definitely feeling regrets, but there's guilt more than anything, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. I think so. I mean, I feel like both can be true. I'm not trying to, like, you know, make a pass for, like, a murderer here, but...
No, I think, I mean, Dan's the most conflicted character to exist, almost. And he has a lot of different sides to him. But in what universe can you kill Keith and then be with Karen, you know? He's the only one who knows the whole story. Karen and everyone else doesn't know.
Right.
Wouldn't that make you, like, if you were Dan, like, yes, you want to make amends and, like, you have this guilt and you want to make things right. But, like, wouldn't that make you feel even worse to warm up to Karen and...
Like, make him feel more guilt?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really complicated.
Yeah, it is complicated. Maybe Dan sees, like, him murdering Keith as, like, his breaking point, where he realized, like, wow, like, I have hit rock bottom. And that's what encouraged him to say, like, okay, you know what? I need to make changes and start treating certain people better. He's treating Zeb pretty shitty, but that's a whole nother thing to unpack right there. But I feel like he does want to try to be better to Karen, in a way, and I don't think it's like, and I almost wonder, like, do the writers want us to think, like, you know, like, oh, Keith is out of the way, now I can move into Karen now. Like, is it that, or is it literally like, okay, like, it's all completely circumstantial. I took away this woman's, the father of this woman's child, and now here I am, I need to try to make amends for it, in a way. And I gotta be there for her.
Yeah, and he wasn't there for her the last time, so now, like, this is a new chance.
Yeah. At the same time, though, like, Lucas is still there, too. Lucas will still be there for that baby, too, and this baby will still have a support system of some kind. Even if it doesn't have, like, a father. But it's really messy.
Yes.
But I am kind of liking the fact that these two are warming up to each other. It's interesting in a way, but there's a lot of layers to it, for sure.
Yeah, there are. I don't know. I mean, it's a good question. Like, is he really being genuine? I think to maybe some extent he is. But I think his guilt is kind of clouding his judgment here, or his decision making. Oh boy.
Yeah. Speaking of cloudy decision making, yes. You want to talk about Brooke and Lucas?
Oh my gosh, this just feels like so after the fact. At the beginning of the episode, she comes to Lucas's room and, like, is saying things like, What exactly did she say? She was like, should we give this another chance, or...
She just says, like, Lucas, I miss you.
Yeah.
And Lucas doesn't say anything, and Brooke is like, okay, I was hoping you'd say that she missed me, too.
Yeah,
and
she's, it was the miss.
Then she says, like, I've been thinking a lot about you and about us, and I thought that would be enough. And
then Lucas, Peyton walks in.
Yeah. Because Lucas says, like, Peyton and I are just friends. And then she sees Peyton. And then Peyton's like, just friends, huh? Well, I'm glad you two are enjoying the benefits.
You always remember dialogue so well.
This whole entire, every scene between Brooke and Peyton, though, do you ever notice that, like, except for, I believe at the banquet, they are on camera together, but, like, during their conversations, you do not see Sophia and Hillary's face on camera at the same time.
Oh.
You always see, like the back of somebody's head. Like, they're together. Like, I'm not trying to say, like, they shot scenes separately or anything like that. But, like, I kind of feel like that illustrates how divided the two of them are. Like, even that very scene right there, like, Brooke is looking at Peyton through the mirror. Like, you don't even see them, like, next to each other in a way. And then, like, at the banquet, it seems like the two of them have, like, not like a reconciliation, but the two of them, like, kind of come together and they, you know, they talk about something real at the very least. And so I feel like that's kind of illustrating something right there. So I kind of like how that was shot.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't really pick up on that, but yeah, it's true.
I don't know if that's a filmmaking trick or whatever. Yeah. I just, you know, it just like really stood out to me personally.
I'm just not understanding like Brooke's thinking here.
Yeah.
It's coming out of left field. What did Rachel say?
I was just going to say that, as Rachel says, it's totally normal to want to tap a keg after a breakup. To which Brooke says, that is not what's happening. And I don't even like beer.
And I, you know, like, so it feels after the fact. But also, I'm really starting to hate the, this love triangle officially, because Brooke is terrible to Peyton when they're at school, giving her that leftovers.
The to-go box.
Yeah.
Which, name brand orange soda watch.
Yep, that's where it was.
I also have to send you something, and I'm going to get your live reaction for.
Oh God.
So Caitlin, I want to get your live reaction to the promo for this episode, which I will include the link to this in the show notes as well, so listeners can see like what Caitlin is reacting to. So for context, during this scene, Brooke brings the go box to Peyton and she says, it's a to-go box since you're screwing my leftovers. And then in the promo, something else happens. And Caitlin, I want your reaction.
Okay, I'm going to play.
When it comes to love.
Lucas, I miss you.
Peyton and I are just friends.
Just friends. Glad to see you're enjoying the benefits.
Always be prepared for war.
Am I missing something?
Go box. Since you f***ing my leftovers.
One Tree Hill. All new next Wednesday at 9, 8 central on the news.
They bleep out screwing. That's amazing.
They made it sound like she said, like, you fucked all my
leftovers. Yes.
Why? They do this one other time during the promos because, you know, I have an encyclopedic knowledge of the promos. They do this one other time in season 5 and it is hilarious.
But... was there... could they not say screwing on the CW?
I honestly think they would just put it that there just to make it look like that she was saying fuck.
Yeah.
Just to make it look like it was more
dramatic.
I don't know. Because I remember seeing that promo, I'm like, oh my God, are they going to curse? They're going to say the F word on network television?
Oh. That is amazing. But so this scene, I hate Brooke in this scene.
Yeah,
I Brooke is pretty truly horrible. Do not like her character in this moment. It is not Brooke. This is not who she is. She is. It's just a new low for her. It's like I saw this and like my jaw drops because I'm like, really? Like she would really say that to Peyton?
Mm-hmm. And as Peyton said, you actually went through all this effort to print me an actual to-go box.
Unbelievable. So it really makes me truly done with this love triangle.
Mm-hmm. And the whole, like, you know, cattiness between the two of them. Peyton's like, at least you're a dedicated bitch. And Brooke's like, says the dedicated slut. And then Brooke's like, remember, I gave Lucas to you and I can take him back whenever I want to.
And, like, yeah, it's like, who is Lucas to give? First
yeah,
off.
Yeah, like.
What the heck? And then the other thing that really bothers me is that Brooke comes up to Peyton with this leftovers box and says all of what we just said. And she never acknowledges all the Derek stuff and
yeah.
all the trauma that Peyton's been through.
Right. Absolutely.
So that makes me dislike her even more.
Yeah. And we talked about that earlier in the season, too, how Brooke doesn't even, like, walk up to Peyton and just be like, okay, hey, like, you went through a hard time. Like, I know you and I aren't good right now, but are you okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
I'm so glad all of this kind of gets resolved, or at least
for the most part,
at the end, we'll get to later, but
jeez. Yeah. But I also want to give another shout out to one of Rachel's lines when Brooke says, like, I'm taking Lucas to the banquet with me. And she's like, Rachel's like, go sleep with him if you're horny. Don't go to the banquet with him. What you're feeling isn't real. I'm like, I love Rachel so much in this episode. I think she's just so funny. Like, she's just always speaking the truth. Like, this is the character I love right here.
She has these moments where, like, she really speaks the truth. And that was one of them. It's like, this is over, Brooke. Like, let's move on. This isn't real anymore.
Right, exactly. I mean, and, you know, especially, like, right after her breakup with Nick and everything, so, like, you know, this definitely is, like, it is a rebound situation.
For sure.
Like, Brooke is feeling lonely. I feel like she's been over Lucas for a long time, and we kind of chatted about this at the end of season 3. Like, does Brooke actually love Lucas? And I feel like she slowly has, like, fallen out of love with him. And I feel like that's getting illustrated right here. Because even Peyton says, like, you know, if you want to get back together with Lucas, you better mean it. Because he deserves somebody who loves him. And, you know, toward the end, like, Brooke even says, like, I was mad at you when I asked him to go to the banquet with me. And Peyton's like, so you did it out of spite? Brooke's like, not at first. Which means, like, maybe subconsciously she was, but... You know, she didn't actually, like, do it purposefully. And then she says, now I don't even know anymore.
And then she also asks Peyton why she hasn't made a move.
And Peyton says, like, it's because you haven't dated a guy since Lucas. Because, obviously, Peyton knows nothing about Nick.
Yeah. And that she probably would have said something to Lucas at this point if she had known that Brooke was with someone else. One thing I want to say is, so Brooke... Like, at the end of, or the very beginning of this season, she breaks up with Lucas. And then, you know, she's getting over that, and then there's the whole Mr. Chavez distraction, and now she's alone again. It's probably kind of a natural thing to, like, go back to the last, your thoughts kind of go back to the last person that you loved, Lucas, because there isn't any other distraction. And then mm-hmm. she's, like, just second-guessing her decision to break up with him. I feel like that's kind of like a realistic situation for people. You know? Like, you're going to have those moments after a bad breakup where you're probably going to question if you made the right decision.
Yeah, where you're like, should I have done this? And should I go back to them? Like, I've been in situations like that before plenty of times where I'm like, you know what, like, let's try this again. And like, no, there's a reason why
yeah.
I ended this situation, you know?
Exactly.
So, more things to come, and they all happen in Dakota.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Dakota's pretty action-packed, now I think about it.
It really is.
Let's talk about the banquet. First off, those flowers, I really like those flowers.
Where? Remember
when Brooke was, like, putting the flowers together, she says,
yes.
What do you think of these flowers? And Rachel's like, they are ugly, but whatever.
When they were getting ready for it, yeah.
Yeah, and then Mouth says, like, those flowers look awesome. And then Brooke's like, okay, we are losing the flowers because of Mouth saying that. Like, I like
flowers. I didn't really know what was wrong with them either.
I thought they were pretty. They were blue. Or possibly purple. I am a little bit colorblind, so I don't know what color they are. But anyway. Which I just want to point out, though, Mouth and Gigi are going to the banquet together. And, you know, to go back to my intro, too, because Rachel is very, like, forceful with Mouth, and just because she didn't have a date. And she just says, okay, Mouth, I need you to take me to the banquet. I'll pick you up at 6, and don't wear the jacquard. Like, she just expects, like, Mouth to, like, you know, bend over backward for her. And then Mouth is like, oh, sorry, I'm going with Gigi. It was kind of funny to see, like, Rachel in that situation where she's like, wow, like, somebody's not bending over backwards for me. I mean, not just Mouth, but Haley's not bending over backwards for her, too, for the tutor in calculus. So it was kind of interesting to see the side of Rachel, like, not getting what she wants and how she's, like, trying to grapple with that. And she even, like, purposefully puts a seat in charge so Gigi doesn't sit next to her. Or doesn't sit next to Mouth. And she's like, I had to seat you at a different table. And then Gigi's like, that's fine. I have the best seat in the house. And then she just gets in Mouth's lap.
I know, that was really cute.
And it's just interesting for Rachel to be like, God, I can't fucking win here. She says, okay, I'll get you a chair.
But it also kind of shows how, like, Rachel takes Mouth for granted.
Yeah.
And we've even seen that with Brooke. Like, Brooke will take Mouth for granted. Like, everyone kind of just assumes Mouth will do whatever, whenever.
Right.
And I'm glad, like, Rachel kind of got put in her place a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Like, dude, and you can't.
And that's happened to her all around in this episode.
Yeah.
I love it. Everybody goes to the banquet, and I love this song that's playing by the Wreckers. Is it the Wreckers? Yes, it is the Wreckers. Lay Me Down.
Oh, yeah, that was a good moment.
Yeah, everybody is, like, you know, coming to sit at the table and everything. It was just, I don't know. It was a cute. That is my favorite musical moment. I'm not afraid to admit that. have you ever been to a banquet of this caliber before? Not for, like, sports, but just, like, a banquet for, like, work or something like that?
I don't know if I've ever really been to a banquet. To be honest.
This is just my opportunity to say, banquets like this are never fun.
Yeah.
They're always so boring. You're just seeing the people that you see, like, literally every day, but you're just dressed up, and you're like, God, I don't want to dress up for you. I see you every day.
It's just like a formal dinner, basically.
Yeah.
With, like, speeches.
I hate banquets like this with a fiery passion. They can be good with, like, reflections and stuff like that. Like Whitey's speech was really good, and it is fun to attend for something like that. But overall, like, the whole dinner portion is just so annoying. It's like, can't we just skip right to the speech? It's like, I don't want to eat dinner with all of you.
Dear me.
I was invited to a banquet last night, and I was like, I would rather drink bleach.
I'm going to be honest. I don't know if I've ever been to a banquet.
You were so lucky. Really? Like, like what you do for work? Like, they never... No. That's so good.
I've never had a job where I've had to go to banquets. Nope.
Ugh, lucky. Lucky you.
I guess so. I mean, a free nice dinner can be good, though.
Yeah. That is good. And there are times where, like, this is great, but for the most part, like, I never look back on a banquet and I say,
it's the best time of your life.
Yeah, like, wow, like, I'm really glad I went.
Oh, that's funny.
Anyway, just needed to chime in with that little thing there. But Whitey delivers a speech.
I wanted to say something before that.
Oh, please, go.
So just the moment when Peyton walks up with Derek and introduces everyone to Derek, because this is the first time that they're actually meeting him, and, like, Nathan and Haley, I think, shake his hand. And then there's this moment where Peyton looks at Brooke, like, they look at each other, and it's like Brooke doesn't say anything to Derek at all. And it's just, like, this subtle moment where a lot is being said or shown, at least, without them actually saying anything. So it's like this would be a big deal for your best friend to meet your brother.
Yeah.
But in these circumstances, they aren't talking. So like, I found that really interesting to me. It was like a subtle scene.
And even Lucas, when she talks to Brooke, and because I think Brooke says like, Derek seems nice. Lucas is like, he is. You should really get to know him. And Brooke's like, what's the point? Because I imagine like Brooke is like, because Brooke is being so fucking stubborn and she doesn't want to like, you know, be friends with Peyton right now. So I feel like, you know, even like trying to get to know like her half brother, like she just doesn't want to fall into like what she sees as a trap. To like, you know, to fall back in with Peyton.
Yeah.
And that's just something she's not interested in. Yeah.
But now we can talk about the speeches now. I just wanted to mention that moment because I thought it was pretty like important.
Yep.
Well, we get Nathan receives his MVP award, and his speech is really short. He basically just thanks the team and coach.
And Lucas hands the award to him too and says, you're our leader, Nate.
And you kind of wonder, like, if the circumstances behind the scenes with the whole Dante stuff, if that was different, would Nathan have given more of a longer speech, you know? I can kind of feel like there's a bit of like a somber tone to it because Nathan knows he has to lose the game, but he doesn't want to lose the game and let everyone down, and that sucks for him too. So I feel like you can read a lot into that little short speech.
Mm-hmm. The whole duality of it. I feel like this, this just sparked a memory with me. I remember the end of season 2 with her English final. The whole thing, like, the greatest thing to achieve is to get your heart's desire. Or, no, the worst thing to happen is to lose your heart's desire and also to gain it. I forget what the exact quote was, but you get what I mean?
Yeah, I remember that.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, kind of what's happening right here.
Well, that's a really good connection, Jeremy. That's like the perfect quote for the moment.
Yeah.
Truly.
It'd be funny if, like, you know, they brought it back around. They did not, but yeah, I just thought about that.
Yeah, because like, if he gains, I think the quote was like the tragedy, right? Wasn't tragedy in there?
The two greatest tragedies. Like, one is to lose your heart's desire. The other is to gain it. Yeah.
Yeah. So him gaining his desire to win the game is ultimately going to be tragic because what are the consequences of that?
And then Whitey's speech is just like outright heart-wrenching.
Barry Corbin, I'm gonna speak for you. Give him more work, please. Honestly, it was such a great speech.
It's so true, though. And then he talks about how like how much he loves basketball and how much he loves the team, and he said his biggest regret is that he couldn't share it with the other love of his life, Camilla. And he says, Camilla was the only person who ever understood me. Being with her made everything else seem less important. The moment I met her, I knew that I was looking at my future, and I knew no person could ever come between us. I know Camilla would have liked this group of boys. I want to thank them, and I want to thank all of you for allowing me to spend a lifetime with my first love. Thank you. And he's saying this like tears in his eyes. And, ooh.
It gives you chills, and as he's saying that, the camera is panning across different faces, including Brooke, specifically.
Because the whole thing...
She's thinking.
Which we come back... the whole thing we come back to the coda later is the whole thing, like, a love so strong that no person can come between it. She's really, like, internalizing that, so this is, like, a good moment for them to experience.
Yeah, I mean, really, Whitey's speech is a catalyst for what's about to come in the coda. Yep. So. Oh, I love Whitey so much.
Yes.
Whenever he talks about Camilla, it's just like, oh, pulls your heartstrings.
Every now and then, I keep thinking about, like, this alternative version of One Tree Hill, like, on the alternate pilot where, like, Whitey is narrating the story and not Lucas. And it just makes you wonder, like, what if? Like, what if they went down that route, you know?
I know. What if they did? It would have had like an Everwood vibe to it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. Didn't that end like after like two seasons though or something though? Like the whole thing, not Everwood the show, but like the whole, you know, narration thing. Because didn't the guy die, like, during the show?
No. He died more recently.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know why I thought that.
Yeah, I'm almost positive he died more recently. Now you make me want to fact check it.
He died in 2023. Why? Yes. And I think that he died, like, in 2002.
He died, okay. And then Treat Williams, the dad, died.
Yeah.
Like, soon after.
He died?
Yes! For a motorcycle accident.
No fucking way!
Last year.
What?
I know! Yes. It was like soon after. I can't think of the actor's name who was the narrator.
John Beasley, but Treat Williams? Oh my god.
June 2023. He was 71. It was a motorcycle accident.
Oh my god, I can't believe I'm getting this news like in the space of a podcast. Alive.
This is in the moment. Jeremy's face is shocked. I know, it was heart-wrenching to hear about that. I'm surprised you didn't hear.
Oh my god, I...
Yep.
Wow. I don't know if I'm gonna cut this out of the conversation or if I just wanna keep it there, but... Wow. Okay.
Yeah, literally, John Beasley died, and a week later, Treat Williams died. I'm not kidding you.
Do I have, like, a Mandela effect or something? Where, like, I legitimately thought John Beasley died during filming.
From my recollection, he narrated all four seasons, so.
Okay. Or did his character die? I don't remember anything. I haven't watched Everyone since it aired.
His character, I think, did die, yeah. That's a good point. Maybe you're getting that mixed up in his head. But he may have still narrated it.
Holy shit. Okay. Well, anyway.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a while either, so my memories are a little fuzzy. That was a side tangent. I'm sorry to bring that news to you, but yes.
Yeah, it's all good. I'll survive. Yeah, that is a good show. That show was one of the shows that did get canceled as a result of the WB-UPN merger, which became the CW. And now the CW barely exists as a network anymore.
Yeah, what is going on with the CW?
Like, they...
New leadership.
Essentially, I don't necessarily think it's that necessarily, but like the network was never profitable, for one thing. They just never were able to make money from... any of their shows, for the most part. So essentially they just like ended all of their shows, and now rather than like filming their own shows to keep like the network up and running, they're like picking up like Canadian imports, so they're airing like shows from like other territories, but they're not like producing their own content anymore, if that makes sense.
They're not producing any content?
No.
And they were the network that was bringing a lot of diversity to their, like, diverse characters and actors and everything, yeah, to the storylines and various shows. They, yeah, were really pushing hard on that. It was really great, so it's a shame. I did hear there were a lot of changes, but I didn't think they wiped out everything.
Yeah, the network was just never profitable, unfortunately, and...
Why?
It's just sad, because I feel like they put out more money than they were getting. Honestly, I feel like it might be a leadership problem at the end of the day, but I feel like they spent more money than they actually were getting in.
Huh.
Because, like, especially if you think of, like, the later years, too, like, the superhero shows, too, like, those had, like, really, like, expensive special effects and whatnot, too. So I feel like that probably didn't help them either.
That's upsetting. Like, that's really upsetting, because there's such great shows that came out of that network.
Mm-hmm. We got One Tree Hill for 5 seasons on that network.
Jane the Virgin, one of the best shows.
Yeah. So many good shows. I used to, like, CW was my network for, like, the longest time. Like, I would watch, like, pretty much, like, every show on there, and then eventually I phased out of it, and yeah, now it's, like, kind of gone, and that's sad.
Really sad.
But any okay, case, shall we...
Yeah, we really went on a side tangent. Whether we're keeping that in or not, I don't know. Are we ready for the... Oh, we're not ready for the coda yet. We have to talk about Derek and Peyton.
No, we need to talk... Yes. So we learned that Psycho Derek is in jail. Yay!
Yeah, that's a relief for sure.
Mm-hmm. And Peyton is talking to Derek. Derek tells Peyton that she has to take a risk with Lucas. And, you know, Peyton just keeps saying, like, oh, it might not be the right time. Derek's like, well, it never is. That's why they call it a risk. And this is what and Derek, like, encourages Peyton, like tell him to ask him to go to the banquet with you. And then she does.
And gets rejected.
Uh-huh. Because he already agreed to go with Brooke at that point. And then, yeah, so, and then while all this is happening, Derek repaints Peyton's room. Which, did they get a new set for Peyton's bedroom?
No.
Because it looks bigger.
Does it?
Yeah, her whole bedroom is like the size of my apartment, Caitlin. Like, it looks real big.
It might have just been, like, the angle. And also, like, I feel like white walls make it look bigger than it... White walls make spaces look bigger. No, I'm talking about,
like, even after it was repainted red. Even after it was repainted red, like, that's what I thought it looked bigger.
Well, maybe they did. I don't know why they would do that, but I didn't notice that.
I guess, like, new beginnings or whatever, but it just looks significantly bigger than the bedroom I remembered, personally. But what do I know?
It could be. If they took the opportunity with the painting and the repainting and the window being smashed.
Yeah, and, like, even with, like the shelves added on, too, like, it still looked like there's a lot of walk-in room.
I mean, I feel like Peyton's bedroom was always pretty big. She had a bathroom in there. She had a closet you could walk into.
She had a bathroom? When did she have a bathroom? She had a bathroom in the...
Yeah, she has a bathroom.
In the bedroom?
Yeah, she has a bathroom in the bedroom.
Oh. You're right. I do remember that.
Yeah,
I have this memory
many
of, like,
scenes
Peyton coming...
where she's standing and brushing her teeth or...
I do remember. Yes, I do remember that.
Flushing the Coke
but...
down the... toilet and
yeah. You're right. So literally it is the size of my apartment.
Yeah, because there's a bathroom too. Yeah.
Probably a little bit bigger than my apartment, to be honest with you. But
oh my god,
this is me subtly introducing to my listeners, like, I just got a new apartment. Not to brag but yeah, I'm here and Peyton's bedroom is bigger than my apartment. And that I am bitter about. Anyway.
Hence why we have not recorded in a while.
Yeah, listeners, that's why it's been 2 months since we recorded. In addition to the holidays, in addition to, like, the move interest, it's been a while. So by this point, we've been back for a few weeks now. But, well, as you're listening to this, I should say. But yeah, we apologize for that. We adore you.
It's been an interesting time. And I wasn't even the one moving.
Yeah. We actually tried to record this episode. What was it? Like, was it a month ago?
No, I think it was like 2 weeks
point?
Ago.
Yeah, like two or 3 weeks ago or something like that. And, you know, it's been such a stressful time. But I said, Caitlin, like, I can definitely record. And then, like, 2 hours before we were scheduled to record, I'm like, Caitlin, I just had a nervous breakdown because my McDonald's order was incorrect. Maybe we should reschedule. So
there was just a lot happening. And that was the final straw.
So, like, but now I am here. I am living here in a place that's smaller than Peyton's entire bedroom.
It's all good.
Anywho, that is that. We are really unhinged in this episode. I love it. Hopefully the listeners do too.
We really are. There's just a lot.
Anyway, so back to the topic at hand. Derek ends up getting a call. He's getting called back into duty. But he doesn't tell Peyton right away because, you know, Peyton asks him to go to the banquet with her. And so he agrees to it. And then he ends up revealing to Peyton later that, like, hey, I'm getting called back to duty. And that's when Peyton says, well, I guess I should have let you hand out that drawing. Because earlier in the episode, the people always leave drawing. Derek was going to hand it up. And then Peyton's like, I don't think I need that anymore. Because I think she kind of thought that Derek was going to say... And turns out he's not.
It's so heartbreaking because, like, whenever Peyton opens herself up, this is what happens. It's like she asked Lucas to go to the banquet, and then he turned her down because of Brock. And then she's opening up to Derek. It took a bit, but she's opening up to him, and they seem to have a nice bond that's beginning to develop. And now he's leaving. It's like, this character cannot win. And it's heartbreaking to see it on her face, because it's like she wants to be strong, but after this happened so many times, that's going to break anyone.
Mm-hmm. And even, like, their goodbye at the end is, like, so sad, because Peyton eventually says, like, you know, I gotta learn to walk alone. And Peyton's like, you'll be careful, right? Derek says, don't worry about me. I won't go trying to be a hero or anything. And then Peyton, with tears in her eyes, says, sure you will. Then they hug, and Derek's like, I'll be back, Peyton. And I will admit, like, I was initially critical of, like, the whole storyline with Psycho Derek, because I thought it was, like, this was, like, a way of punishing Peyton for finally being willing to open up, because we saw her, she opened up to somebody, he turned out to be a psycho, and it just didn't work out in that regard. So that's what I thought initially, but in time, I felt like this overall showed how Peyton overcame adversity, because here she is, opening up to someone again, getting burned by having someone leave again, because people always leave, but here she is, still willing to walk alone, and that's great, that's fiercely independent, but she then realizes at the end that she can still take risks to let people in, despite all the trauma that she went through, which that's about what we'll get to in the coda, I know, but she does, like, eventually let somebody in. So I feel like this shows that she can be fiercely independent, but it doesn't mean she has to be alone while doing so. So I ends up coming around to this journey for Peyton, I feel like, after, like, sitting with it for a few episodes.
It's a nice evolution that we see, like, from the beginning of the season till now, basically. And I like that we're shown that she's a strong character, which we already knew that, but, like, this is just further supporting that. I just wish, like, she could catch a break for once. And I'm liking the real Derek, and I want more. And I want to see Peyton connected to absolutely. A family member for the long term. And now Derek is gone. It's frustrating that we just don't have that dynamic with her character, you know, the family dynamic.
Yeah.
Consistently.
It would have been so nice to see Ernest Waddell stick around for a longer period of time. Yeah, that's definitely a huge, huge, huge missed opportunity. Even, like, you know, keeping in mind, like, you know, what happens at the end with her and Lucas, it still would have been nice to have both at the same time. But I still really did like the fact that, like, because Peyton could have, like, closed up. Because, like, oh god, I'm getting left again. But no, she still ends up confessing her feelings to Lucas. Regardless of, like, what she just went through. And I feel like that is very, very powerful on her end.
Yeah, I'd never really thought of it like that. The way you just framed that. But that's really true. Like,
thank you. I didn't even think about it until I started to watch this episode again today.
That's really good. I think that does speak a lot about her character. But at the same time, you know, I just wish she didn't have to go through all that she goes through.
Yeah. At the same time, I wish she, like, you know, she was also seeing a therapist for, like, you know, talking about her abandonment issues.
Yep.
And everything. I'm pretty sure that's going to be added to the Always and Forever drinking game. Like, every time we mention Peyton needing to go to therapy, every time Barry Corbin deserves more work.
I know, we have our whole long list.
Every time I say I have space for this.
Like, name brand orange soda.
That's something to do with just watching the episode, okay? anyway, shall we go back to talk, or not go back? Shall we go to we're talking about this coda?
Yeah, let's do it. We have the song Center of Attention by Jackson Waters playing in the background. And we start off at the pier, which is the scene we just talked about where Peyton and Derek say goodbye to each other.
And then we are on Rachel / Brooke's doorstep. And this is when Brooke and Lucas come to terms with the fact that they don't have a love so strong that no person can come between it. And they decide to be friends. And
I'm so glad we had that scene because I'm like, please do not continue on with us.
Yeah. This was a very, very good end to the Brooke and Lucas of it all, the Brucus, as we say. And I haven't been shipping them since I rewatched season 3, but it's this has been a fun journey, I will say.
And I feel like Brooke and Lucas can be friends. For some reason, I feel like they legitimately can be friends.
Yeah, and that doesn't mean it's going to be hard in the beginning. Yeah. Like, it will be like a hard process, but this seems pretty positive right
now. And it's not like bad terms like it was for the initial breakup. This feels like they're both acknowledging the same thing, you know? And that probably feels good. Like, they agree, you know, that this isn't right. And then we are back at the banquet, and this is where Haley agrees to tutor Rachel. But she has a few conditions.
Yes, name them.
Rachel has to follow Haley's schedule. If Rachel misses one session, it's over. And finally, Haley says, no matter how nice I seem, you have to remember that I can't stand you. Okay?
I love how she takes like Rachel's hand in that last line. No matter how nice I seem, you have to remember that I can't stand you. Okay? Love her. Then we are back on Rachel and Brooke's doorstep, and this is when Brooke is looking at a photo album of her and Lucas, and she quite literally closes that chapter of her life.
Next, we're in Dan's living room, and this is intense.
Yeah.
Dan tells Nathan that he's gonna have to lose the state championship. Which is, like, super heartbreaking. And they're just, like, sitting with the fact that, oh, gosh, really?
After everything that happened this episode, after, like, Whitey's speech and everything, like, it's completely inevitable. It really does seem hopeless. Mm-hmm. And I really like that plot point. Like, it's like this moment, like, between the rise in action and the climax, where you're like, oh, my God, like, what can we do? Like, everything feels so hopeless right now.
Yep, and you really are wondering what is going to happen in the next episode.
Yep. Now, we have a scene in Peyton's room. Do you want to do a dramatic
sure. review for this? Oh my god, this is so intense.
Who do you want to be, Lucas or Peyton?
It doesn't matter. You're better than I am, so you choose.
Okay, we'll require a stronger accent.
Probably Peyton.
Okay, I'll be Peyton, you be Lucas.
Now this is more like it. Listen, I just wanted to say that I'm sorry that we didn't get to spend more time together tonight.
How'd it go with Brooke?
I realized tonight that it's over between me and Brooke. And she realized it too.
I love you, Lucas.
I love you too, Peyton.
You don't understand. I've been holding this in for a really long time, and you just need to know. I love you. I'm in love with you.
Oh, snap!
And I love how, like, when the camera zooms out of the window, the lyric is, I would have waited a lifetime for you. Yeah. Like, it's...
I know. I love... That is... I'm just going to reveal it now. That is my favorite musical moment, Center of Attention by Jackson Waters. It just, there's so much emotion, especially with that final Peyton and Lucas scene that I feel like it just, it captures it perfectly.
Yep, absolutely.
And you're not fully expecting, while everything in the episode has built up to that moment, you're not fully expecting, like, Peyton to reveal that. in that moment.
Because I feel like, to go back what I said too, I feel like it would have been so easy for Peyton to just close up. But she says, you know what, now, like, I am going to take a risk because this is worth it. And she does it. And that's why my favorite quote, and it's not because I'm a Leighton shipper. I'm not identifying as a Leighton shipper.
Okay.
I just love that I love that Peyton has her strength here where she says, you don't understand. I've been holding this in for a really long time. And you just need to know, I love you. I'm in love with you. So that's my favorite quote.
Dang, that's your favorite quote?
Yes, it is.
Oh, snap. I was not expecting that at all.
Well, like I said, I love that she is being strong here. And, you know, again, it's not because I'm a Leighton shipper. It's because I just love that she shows this side of strength. And I feel like this is really powerful. Like, when she, like, emphasizes the word, like, in, and I'm in love with you, it's just, it really gives me chills. It makes me so happy. Because I'm like, yeah, you get that, boy, girl.
Okay, but you're not identifying as a Leighton shipper. Interesting. I mean, I guess you're just not anything with Lucas. Like,
honestly, yeah. I'm pro Peyton being happy.
I don't know. Has Lucas really been that terrible this season?
No,
I feel
he's
like
fine.
There hasn't really been any major.
He's
major
fine.
Things with him.
He's fine. I'm still bitter about him. Anyway. What is your favorite quote, though?
So, I give the Peyton quote that at the very end an honorable mention, but I have to go with Whitey's speech in the last portion. I'm going to read it again just because it's so good.
Oh, please.
I want to thank them. I want to thank all of you for allowing me to spend a lifetime with my first love. It's just, I got chills hearing his speech. I can't help it. And that line is just like his first love of basketball. It's just, everything about it is so, so beautiful. So I'm going to go with that one. And I would say, honestly, the highlights of the episode were basically the quotes. Like, Whitey's speech was a big highlight for me. And then the ending scene with Peyton, personally. Those are my favorite portions of this episode. I think... Well, we already shared our musical moments, didn't we?
Okay. Yes, we did. Yeah.
So,
I was going to say, roll into our ratings. Before we started recording, you said you didn't like, you thought this episode was pretty lackluster. I'm like, really? I liked it. And so, like, but it doesn't seem like you hated
so
it.
So, there's a lot to talk about, I guess. As we're talking about it, I think I'm going to up my rating a little.
Okay.
But so we had to prepare for this like 2 or 3 weeks ago, and then Jeremy was in crisis, so we had to postpone, and I was just like not looking forward to rewatching it. And honestly, there are major highlights to me. I like the banquet, and I like that final cliffhanger, like, is so good. And I like the wrap up with Derek, even though I want more from that. But I don't know. Watching season 4 is a weird experience for me. I feel like if I were to binge it, I would like it more. But watching the episodes bit by bit, and we've also been watching it very slowly and spread out. So I feel like my ratings have been harsher because of that, in addition to like just not liking the episodes. So I don't know what it is. But it's taking me a long time to get into season 4. So I feel like I'm kind of, I don't know. I'm going to give it 4 out of 5 red painted walls. Initially, I was giving it a 3 because like most of the episodes of the season, I've given it a 3. I think I gave 1 4.
Well, I give it also 4 out of 5 to-go boxes full of leftovers that we fucked.
Oh my God.
Because I think this is the best episode of the season so far, honestly.
Well, the episode,
I really enjoyed this episode.
I really liked, I'm going back in my notebook. Oh, 405. I love you, but I've chosen darkness. I still think that was my favorite episode so far.
Yeah. Oh, I like that episode a lot, too. There's a lot of, like, problematic elements that I'm still, like, kind of still trying to sit with. But overall, I feel like this episode has overall aged the best. I feel like, as far as, you know, the first 8 episodes of the season are concerned. Yeah.
I can see that.
So, I enjoy it. I love everything with Peyton. I love that we have some type of resolution for the whole Brucus dynamic. I just really enjoy it. And I feel like a lot of my ratings go toward, like, the musical moments that I vividly remember. Like the whole Wrecker's number, Lay Me Down. Like, I don't know, for some reason, like, that musical moment, like, sticks out to me. For, like, the series. So I feel like that's also coloring a little bit of my judgment.
For the series, really? Huh.
Yeah, it's like one of the top 10 musical moments that I would remember. Ooh, what if we came up with a spoiler central episode where we talk about, like, our upcoming musical moments of the series that we just remember and we're looking forward to seeing?
Oh, I like that. Context. I like that.
Okay. Listeners, you got a little bit of a workshop right there.
That was an idea in real time.
Yep. Coming your way soon. We'll chat. We'll chat off mic about when we can do that.
For sure. Thank you for listening to this episode of Always and Forever. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook at AlwaysOTHPod. You can also email us at alwaysothpod@gmail.com. That's AlwaysOTHPod.
Always and Forever is also on Patreon. You can support us over on patreon.com/alwaysothpod to gain access to our private Discord server where you can chat with us and other listeners. Bonus episodes included our spoiler-full mini episodes. We actually have one that just launched in the Patreon feed today. You'll also get our Drama Queens Reaction Podcast Royal Review and our movie podcast, Baker Soundstage. In addition to that, you'll also get early episode releases. We really, really appreciate any money that you can donate to us on Patreon, even if it's just $1 a month. That is incredibly helpful to keep our podcast afloat, because we really love what we do, and we just want to try to make this as sustainable as possible. And the more money we raise, the better we can make this podcast. And it would also increase some of our bandwidth. And as I said in a previous episode, if you want us to stop asking for money, you gotta give us money.
Jeremy.
Like, do the other wholesome bit. There's another way to support us, Caitlin. Like, what is the other way to support us?
But if you can't support us on Patreon, which I understand, it can be
because capitalism sucks and money is expensive. I get it. Okay. Just want to do that little disclaimer.
If you can't support us on Patreon, we understand, but you could also leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That's the easiest way to support us and to help One Tree Hill fans new and old find us. And if you leave us a review, we may read it on the show. We haven't had many reviews lately, so
we haven't had a review in a year. Like, please.
Give us reviews.
Our overall Apple rating is 4.5 right now, because there are a few 1-star reviews in there, and that breaks my heart. They didn't leave a review, but they just left 1-star. They didn't write anything. So, please, listeners, give us 5 stars. We would appreciate it.
I have only rated podcasts 5 stars. Like, otherwise, not going to give you a rating.
Yeah, if I don't like a podcast, I just stop listening to it. I'm like, okay, that was good. It's fine. I'm not going to, like, give it a 1-star review. Like, what kind of...
I don't understand that.
You must be a loser if you do that. So that being said, if you like us, even if you just moderately enjoy us or tolerate us, please leave us a 5-star review, and it would, like, mean the absolute world to us. Anyway... I'm Jeremy Rodriguez, and you can follow me on Twitter at RodriguezJeremy.
And I'm Caitlin Ilinich, and you can follow me on Twitter at Miss I Reads. We'll be seeing ya.
We'll be seeing ya. Uh-huh. Almost.